Welcome to the Minerals and Royalties Podcast, the home of CEOs and investors in the minerals and royalties space.
Hey guys, this is Tim Powell from the Minerals and Royalties Authority. After a busy Q2 on the deal-making front, it was my pleasure to have Dave Spiker, President and CEO of Freehold Royalties, and Rob King, Vice President of Business Development from Freehold Royalties, back onto the podcast. During the episode, we talk about all the major transactions Freehold has closed in the last 5 years and how their acquisition strategy and portfolio has evolved over time. Let's jump into the episode and hear more of what Dave and Rob had to say.
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. Dave, great to have you back. You're our first third timer. So to earn that title, you got to keep doing deals and doing things of significance. So that's a good thing for Freehold. And it's a pleasure to have you on, Rob. We'd love to have you give a little bit of a background yourself. But gentlemen, just before we dive in, great to see Freehold continue to stay active, continue to do deals. I think you're everyone's favorite Canadians down here in the States, if I can speak on behalf of the space. So without further ado, Rob, why don't you introduce yourself and then we'll pick back up from where we left off, Dave, in November when you were last on, November 2021.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Thanks, Tim. So Rob King, I'm a VP of Business Development with Freehold. You know, my background is, you know, a couple decades in the investment banking side, you know, most of the time in Calgary, focusing on North American upstream clients, and then a couple years in London, where I dabbled both in the international energy, but also on the mining square. But you know, most of my time is spent on the in the energy investment banking part of the world before joining the Freehold team in January of 2020. It was good to kind of put actual three-dimensional faces to names for a few months before things got weird, and COVID became a reality in March. And you know, we've been able to do a lot of pretty exciting things, you know, with our a dozen people on our business development team.
Great. Well, I think we're going to dive into the A&D strategy from origin to current date. So I think it would be really interesting to see the full picture. But what I'd like to do to start is, Dave, kick it over to you. Let's pick back up. So you came on, I think we recorded October 2021. The podcast went live in November. So if anyone wants to have the in-depth story of Freehold from ground zero, tune into the first and second episodes for sure. But let's rewind a little bit. End of 2021, you guys put out your kind of Q4 or year-end review. Where are you guys at? What did the assets look like, operations, et cetera? And then we'll kind of look at how the world has changed and what opportunities have been available in the market and what you guys have done today. So over to you, Dave.
Okay, yeah, no, great. Yeah, when we last spoke, we just finished closing the $180 million U.S. Eagle Ford deal at the end of September of last year, and the $52 million U.S. Midland deal that we closed the first week of October. So we're really just integrating those into our workflows. You know, that brought over $300 million U.S. of deals that we'd closed in 2021. For Q4 last year, we set a production record for the company at just a snick over 14,000 BOE a day. And really a lot of that was on the strength of DUCs that had been brought on in the second half of last year. And we really saw that, especially the U.S. side of the production. It was our first of, you know, every quarter subsequent of record funds from operations. So we had, you know, 54 million U.S. in funds from operation. You fast forward that to this last quarter that we just released, we're at 65 million U.S. of funds from operation. And that's really, you know, on the strength of the savvy acquisition work with Rob and his team have executed. And clearly the commodity price, you know, benefited from that as well. With that, we've moved our dividend up from 5 cents a share per month in November when we last spoke to current 9 cents a share. And just really, you know, shows the confidence that we have in our asset base right now. Our dividend yield will be about 7.5% at our current share price. And our business is robust, Tim. I mean, you know, we're targeting a 60% payout of funds from operations, with the remaining 40% being reinvested in the business. So the first 60%, you know, is going to shareholders in the form of a monthly dividend. The other 40%, you know, we reinvest in our business. Rob's going to talk about the deals that we're just closing in Q3 of this year. So again, over $120 million US worth of transactions. We exited in the quarter 0.2 times long-term debt to trailing funds from operation. we get these deals closed in the quarter, you know, we look to exit the year at still at about a half a turn of debt. So a lot of capacity to continue to do additional deals. And really, you know, what we've accomplished is quite a balanced portfolio. We see about 40% of our revenue, you know, going forward coming from the US, about 60% of it would be from Canada. So we're balanced on both sides of the border. Our mandate is still the same that we talked about, you know, last fall, of really positioning ourselves, like we say here, in front of the drill bit. So in the core basins across North America, where we think long-term are going to continue to attract capital, you know, through a broad commodity price cycle. And so, you know, we've changed a lot. And I think Rob's really got a good handle on all the numbers of how those deals have played out, what Freehold looks like today. And, you know, if we look at rolling in this work that we're doing this quarter, of how that looks, you know, coming into Q4.
Excellent. So, Rob, I'm really interested to have you kind of dive in on the A&D strategy. What I want to do quickly before we do that and talk about deals is, yeah, I think, at least for me, in the exercise of prepping for this, time, you have a short memory, right? And so it feels like commodity prices have been high forever. But I just want to do a kind of bi-monthly rundown of some of the stuff in the macro for everyone listening to give some perspective. So when we last spoke, it was in October. And this is a summary of natural gas prices within the month, kind of lows and highs, right? So you're looking at about $5 to $6.50. Go to December 2021, you're about $3.50, up to close to $4. February 22, $3.93, upwards to, you know, low $5. April 2022, $5.79, highs of almost $8. June 2022, $8.13, upwards to $9.30. And then here we are in August 2022, $7.58 has been the low this month, $9.33 is the high. So significant run up on the gas side. And we'll revisit gas exposure in y'all's portfolio and how that gas exposure going forward is going to play a factor. But definitely when you look at stuff coming to market and your strategy, I think that run up is interesting, right? And then kind of long-term views on the gas markets being bearish or bullish. On the oil side, just for everyone listening, October 2021, low was 75, upper end was 82. December 2021, 65 to 76. February 2022, 86 to 93. April 2022, $93. Now we break 100. We're at 106 on the top end. June 2022, 101 to 116. And then August, we've hit lows of 86 and we're at 94. So oil kind of went up, and, you know, whether it kind of rebounds back to over 100 or is starting to go down that other side of the mountain, we're not sure. But definitely been a bull commodity price market and has risen quite a bit, respectively, since October when you guys closed those other acquisitions. And then another thing we haven't really talked about in real numbers in any other podcast episodes, but as a company that goes out to the markets and talks about the benefits of investing in the minerals asset class, inflation hedge has always been a selling point. I don't think it's any more relevant than in today's market. I have a chart here I took. It's from the U.S. Bureau of Labor. That's where the stats are pulled. And in October of 2021, inflation was 6.2%. You know, you go back 3-4 months before that, it was low fives. It slowly climbs up to 7.5% in January of this year. It starts to get around 8.5% end of Q1 in April. And through the summer to current date, we're at 8.5 to 9% inflation. So a significant increase here. And, you know, the pitch of minerals, right, is cost of producing energy at these higher prices are going to rise with inflation, with everything. But as a mineral owner, you get exposure to that higher revenue, not the higher cost. So I'll hand it back over to you, Rob. Kind of that's where the world we're in today and how it's evolved over the last 9 months. So you guys clearly look at that and a myriad of other factors to go into your A&D strategy. Talk to me about the recipe in the kitchen and how you guys have been baking pies, right?
I like that analogy. I mean, I think maybe one point on just the commodity price. We did a bit of an acquisition look back as part of our Q2, you know, board materials, you know, a week or so ago. And we think of the close, call it 300 million of deals that we did in 2021. You know, we've recovered almost a third of that in revenue, you know, since those deals have closed. And some of those, most of those deals haven't even celebrated a birthday yet. You know, most of them won't celebrate their birthday until September, October of this year. You know, so we've been, you know, pretty fortunate to be able to enjoy those commodity prices that you talked about, Tim, in terms of, you know, seeing not only significant increase, you know, in the cash flows, but also the volumes that we think we're expecting to see, you know, from those acquisitions have largely tracked, you know, expectations. So that's been really, really positive.
Is your team interested in de-risking their underwriting on minerals acquisitions? What about maximizing the value of your minerals on exits? Source Energy is pioneering energy intelligence to help you stop guessing when, where, and if wells are going to be drilled and completed on your minerals. If you're interested in tracking daily frac crew activity, buying white space before permits are filed, buying permitted acres just before the rigs show up, buying minerals at permit pricing when drilling is in progress, buying DUCs with imminent flush production, or maximizing the value of your permits and DUCs anytime you exit your minerals, then please visit www.sourceenergy.com/minerals or email info@sourceenergy.com for a free demo. I also want to say thank you to Noble Royalties, who's been a leader in the minerals and royalty space since 1997. With the ever-changing landscape of the energy industry, Noble's team urges EMPs, mineral funds, and private families to rethink how they buy and sell their minerals. Noble's legacy and experience will assist in delivering effective solutions to EMPs and private owners alike on how to best maximize their mineral ownership in this ever-changing market. If you're interested in having a conversation about what might be the best solution for your company, fund, or family, then please reach out to Chase Morris at cmorris@nobleroyalties.com or Shannon Manor at smanor@nobleroyalties.com.
Why don't you start from, you want to do a walkthrough of the A&D strategy. So what I'd like to do is I'd like you to start from kind of when you came on board and the U.S. acquisition strategy really got started, implemented, and executed. Let's then hit a pause button at the beginning of 2022, and I'll kind of interject with some thoughts on what I'm seeing, and then we'll pick it back up with the acquisitions here in the last few months.
Sure. I mean, I think you actually got to go a few more years before I joined in Jan of 2020. You know, the overnight success was 5 years in the making. You know, it's one where the team was looking at building out our U.S. portfolio. You know, in 2017 it started. I think in 2018 there's actual capital being deployed in North Dakota. And sort of, you know, setting up almost effectively a ground game, you know, type approach. We're working with land brokers throughout North Dakota and, you know, adding to the portfolio there, and probably did about a dozen deals, you know, for the most part on the smaller side, but there was a couple larger opportunities in the, you know, 20-ish million dollar type range. So that was sort of where the portfolio got to about January of 2020. You know, and then we actually had an interesting few meetings when I joined, where we met with some of the Houston-based, you know, investment banking world, and, you know, we were asking questions about, you know, tell us about North Dakota. And they're like, huh, okay. No one asks about North Dakota, so, you know, for sure we can talk to you about that. Most people wanted to hear about the Permian or hear about the Eagleford or Haynesville, you know, but sure, yeah, we can dust off our Bakken knowledge, you know. And, you know, again, not that Bakken's not a fantastic asset. We've been really happy with a number of the assets that we have in North Dakota. It's just more when you look at the running room and you look how much more opportunity set that there is in Texas, that certainly, you know, opened our eyes. And I think that was very clear through 2020, where you sort of saw what, you know, what few rigs were still turning were certainly in Texas. And so that really, you know, focused us a lot about saying, well, if we're serious about wanting to build a U.S., you know, platform, we're going to have to be serious about adding opportunities, you know, in the Permian and in the Eagleford. And that's largely what we then, you know, focused on, you know, starting in our November 2020 deal, which, you know, gave us that footprint to expand, you know, significantly into the U.S. You know, and since that deal in November 2020, we've done about 10 deals that aggregate up to, you know, about $450 million of capital that we put to work. The position that we've built now, we got about, you know, rough number, a million of gross acres, you know, in the U.S. You know, that compares to about 6 million gross acres that we have in Canada. On a net royalty acre basis, we had about 46,000 in the U.S. You know, production, you know, Dave talked about it there. We have about 5,000 BOEs a day focused in the lower 48. You know, about half of that is in the Eagle Ford. You know, 30% is in the Permian. We, you know, probably have a lot more Midland exposure than we do Delaware. So that certainly is an area that we'd love to get a, you know, a bit more of a Delaware presence. 5% in Bakken. So you can sort of see that Bakken number was how much that's changed, you know, since really expanded our U.S. focus. And other kind of a scattering of in other basins, we'd be about 10%. So, you know, call it, it's a 80 plus percent Texas, Eagle Ford, Permian, you know, type focused opportunity set on our production. You know, really encouraged by what we're seeing on our lands right now. We've got about 33 rigs that are drilling. You know, our Q2 activity on the U.S. This is before we include the acquisitions that we've, you know, have now largely closed. You know, done in 2022. That's the highest level of drilling that we've had in our land since Q1 of 2020. You know, so drilling's back. You know, and we're pretty excited about how that's going to lead to, you know, production growth in the back half of this year and into next.
That's great. You know, listen, I think I'm getting ready to do another podcast episode with Scott Noble, and so in prep for that, we've actually looked at his personal portfolio, which is a couple billion in AUM. And unlike most, he has 20 years of data. And it's really cool to see his underwriting that was originally planned and then what's actually happened with production. And if you can imagine, it's a decline curve, but then it's flat reserve replacement. And the wedge, you know, I call it the serendipitous oil and gas wedge, or, you know, the accretion wedge, whatever you want to call it. But when in times like this, where you get run-ups in pricing, there's innovation on the technology side and different benches become prospective, and there's macro world events, you start to see this inventory ramp up. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about the minerals asset class, right? So it's great to see you guys are getting a ton of development that's organic and you're continuing to add. A couple questions. So gas has gone up quite a bit. In the Delaware, you can definitely get some gassy exposure in parts of Delaware and be in the Permian, but then the obvious one is Haynesville. So I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on, is Haynesville interesting? Do you want to go into the Haynesville? You know, and what about other basins? Anadarko is coming back a bit. I think it has its own unique pros and cons. And then Appalachia's challenged in its own way on scalable deals. But yeah, real quick on just some of the other basins you don't have. And will you go back to the Bakken? What about the DJ? Or is it really going forward? We want to do more Permian, maybe more Delaware. We want to do more Eagleford, maybe Texas Haynesville, or your Texas shop. Over to you guys.
Yeah, no, I can answer that. So you know, our portfolio in general is about 60% liquids and 40% natural gas. Although from a natural gas perspective, it's weighted towards solution gas. So we have very little, you know, pure play natural gas. It's gas that's associated with the oil. And, you know, where we are looking right now, you know, we're certainly looking at the Haynesville, Tim, just trying to get our head around that and whether, you know, now's the right time to invest in natural gas. You know, like I say, we are light on pure play natural gas in the portfolio. But I would say that, you know, in general, our focus is going to be, you know, in Texas. So in the Permian, in the Eagle Ford, and the natural extension to that would be Haynesville if, you know, we decide to add gas to the portfolio. So you're kind of, you know, I'm not going to say it's the first inning of looking at gas, but it, you know, we're probably into maybe inning two or three, just to put it into perspective. So still early in the game, really trying to understand it. But, you know, as far as a portfolio build, you know, again, regardless of commodity, you know, in the U.S., it'll be the Permian, Eagle Ford, and, you know, looking at Haynesville. And in Canada, there's still select plays that, you know, we'd like to add to our position. And so, you know, we're talking, you know, U.S. right now, but I don't want, you know, the listeners to think that Canada isn't still an important part of our business in the right plays and under the right operators.
Okay. One quick question on kind of pure play versus associated gas exposure. I think in a high price environment, you know, you kind of catch over that upside across the board. In a low gas environment, you can make an argument that associated gas may get flared or doesn't get the same type of love because it becomes a nuisance. Whereas when you're a pure play, that's your only revenue stream and your systems are built not to vent and not to flare and capture everything because that's revenue. So that's just kind of an interesting rhetorical question I'm throwing out there is not all natural gas is the same maybe. And then there's proximity to markets as well. So you know, have you guys dug in a little bit on takeaway capacity and proximity to markets, you know, Haynesville versus Appalachia, for instance, on the Gulf Coast proximity, right? And then even up in Canada, you guys know all about getting the tide water and pipeline constraints and all those things, right?
Yeah, and I think that's where we're at. You know, we've got a kind of a good handle on what we'll call the reservoir side of it. And, you know, just trying to get a better handle on the takeaway capacity side, because that's much more complex, right? And you know, as important as it is on the reservoir side for gas, you really got to understand, you know, how you can move that gas around. And to your point on the solution gas, I think that once the infrastructure is in place to conserve gas, you're always going to conserve gas. And I think the industry has moved long enough away with, you know, focus on flaring and venting that, you know, the mandate for a lot of operators is to conserve that gas and just manage their environmental footprint. And so I think that maybe the variability of solution gas, you know, certainly, you know, how it was 5 years ago, I don't think is really how we see it going forward. And I think that the gas, no matter what, is part of, you know, ESG strategy. It's important to investors, and you know, the oil guys are going to make sure they capture that.
No, I would agree with that. You know, if it's any type of greenfield development on a DSU, then it's all about scale and making sure the infrastructure makes sense and is in the right locations to, you know, have the extra cost worth it, right? And being able to leverage that infrastructure in place. But thanks for answering that question. Rob, over to you on you guys did a good overview on where your assets are. Do you see all basins the same in terms of development profile? So here's how this is my assumption. You guys have bought more developed assets in the Eagle Ford, i.e. more production, and you're looking to the Permian for upside. And in the overall portfolio, there's the balance and blend you're looking for. Taking a step further, I kind of read into your comments on we're Midland heavy. We would love to get more Delaware exposure. I would see that as kind of an upside play, right? Because the Delaware has more running room. I don't want to speak for you, but that's my intuition. What are y'all's thoughts on, is it really just opportunity by opportunity, or has there been a formula, if you may?
Yeah. When you look, I mean, we do sort of look at it more like a portfolio, because that's really what we're building is a portfolio. And sort of how these Lego bricks are going to all fit together. I mean, maybe it helps a bit, Tim, to kind of go through some of the, as we sort of thought about these 10 deals that we put into our portfolio since November of 2020, some of the similarities and differences between them. And that also might help, your listeners understand what's important to us and maybe what's not as important. The largest was, you know, our Eagle Ford deal, $180 million. You know, we had a bunch of smaller tuck-ins on a much smaller end, sub $5 million type dollars. So size isn't necessarily important to us. You know, I think there's
if you have the flagship position, no, like you're not going to go do $5 million deals where it doesn't make sense. But if you have a big position in place, you're willing to do tuck-ins around that. Is that correct?
Absolutely fair. You're right. Like if we have a postage stamp of exposure in the Haynesville. But if we were to really roll up our sleeves, you know, it wouldn't be a $5 million opportunity that we would probably, you know, to invest our time there. You know, I say in general, just given the way our team has decided to look at opportunities, you know, good or bad, right or wrong, we've sort of done a very bottoms up technical perspective on it from both the geology, engineering, actually all three, and geology, engineering, and land side. So when we're investing, you know, that amount of work, it's one where it's a similar amount of work, whether it's a $5 million deal or $50 million deal. So in terms of where we've tended to allocate, more of our finite time and human capital, it's probably to more of those, some of those larger deals. It's not that we wouldn't look at smaller, because again, that's not, we don't want that to be a driver, but just the way that we've set ourselves up lends itself better, on the larger type opportunities.
So walk me through as a hypothetical. So you guys, I mean, I didn't realize the Eagleford was that, I mean, it makes sense, but that big of an exposure. I mean, did you say Permian was 30% and Eagleford was
50.
Yeah. So Eagleford heavy. How did the tuck-ins come about? Were they inbounds? Did your land team kind of say, hey, these are the areas we like, and there's a little bit of proactivity going on there? If I'm a listener and I'm seeing Freehold put press releases out for $180 million deals, but I got a nice $12 million deal, maybe I'm not sending it to you, but I should. How did that come about? And then another question is, talk a little bit more detail about your position in Eagleford and what bolt-ons are attractive, what counties, what operators, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, actually I can sort of point to a number of the tuck-ins that we did where, some of the best advertisements we did was, the Eagleford transaction in September of 21, the OneMap deal that we closed in October. Those were great, I'd say, advertisements that we got a lot of inbounds from, people saying, look, if you like this, you might like this. And, a bunch of those we didn't like, but, a couple that we did. And we're able to add in a couple of tuck-ins on frankly, both of those opportunities. The deal that we're closing tomorrow actually is largely in the Eagleford, and that's that just sort of fits in really nicely with the the position that we have under Marathon. It's actually not operated by Marathon, but it's sort of in the same core Carnes or area code that we would love to get more exposure to. It's been less us going out and proactively hitting up which operators that we want, probably a bit more finding which areas we're most interested in and targeting those, both in terms of what reactive opportunities that we look at and where we're picking the phone up and trying to see what we can't shake out.
Hey guys, I wanted to take a quick break from the conversation to say thank you to Noble Royalties, who's been a leader in the minerals and royalty space since 1997. With the ever-changing landscape of the energy industry, Noble's team urges EMPs, mineral funds, and private families to rethink how they buy and sell their minerals. Noble's legacy and experience will assist in delivering effective solutions to EMPs and private owners alike on how to best maximize their mineral ownership in this ever-changing market. If you're interested in having a conversation about what might be the best solution for your company, fund, or family, then please reach out to Chase Morris at cmorris@nobleroyalties.com or Shannon Manor at smanor@nobleroyalties.com. Predicting operator behavior is the name of the game in the mineral space, but using permits and rig locations alone to do this is not enough. Detecting well pads and frack ponds in order to see which permits are on the rig schedule, discount permits that won't ever be spudded, and determine which ducts are next up on the frack schedule is key to de-risking your underwriting. By using satellite imagery and AI, Source Energy shows oil-filled well pad construction before permits are filed, shows frack pond filings even before the crew arrives, and shows pinpoint frack crew movements daily, so you can get ahead of drilling activity and completions. If you're interested in leveraging this technology to revolutionize your ground game, then please feel free to visit www.sourceenergy.com/minerals or email info@sourceenergy.com for a free demo.
Let's go over to the Midland Basin. So again, kind of core Carnes Trough area, huge Marathon exposure, Eagleford. If anyone's out there listening, you got something good, I think that's a good fit for Freehold and the Eagleford. Let's move over to Midland Basin.
And yeah. I mean, Midland is one where if you were to look at our production in the first half of this year, it would only be about 14% of our U.S. production. If you roll forward pro forma, the two deals that we closed, the Howard County deal and the other diversified Midland opportunity that we added, that's moving that from 14% to 25% of our production. So a big piece of that Midland exposure is definitely in Howard County. The one overarching theme I would say, and this applies to Permian, applies to Eagleford, really anything that we're looking at, is that kind of core and tier one lands is the number one importance. Almost everything else, we have a lot more flexibility when we think of it, whether it's size, whether it's how much development value there is relative to PDP, whether it's mineral title versus ORI. I'd say whether it's a concentrated operator exposure like Marathon that we have in the Eagle Ford, or whether it's more diversified. I think the overarching must have on anything that we look at is that if it's in those core tier one rocks, I think we're very interested in seeing how we can put our best foot forward.
Okay, great. So what I'd like to do is kind of summarize from my seat, right? So you go, it's kind of NAPE timeframe, and it's February of 2022, and momentum goes to market, right? GRP goes to market right after that. Momentum's already announced a couple of their sales. GRP's still out there. Avant has a really nice Midland Basin position. Foundation Minerals sold to Sitio. They were, split Delaware and Midland. Fortis is out in the stack right now. I believe that deal's in the final stages of getting closed. Those are some of the big ones that kind of come to my mind right away. There's, a step lower in the market where Dietring and Ten Oaks and advisors like that really thrive, $10 to $50 million, right? There's a lot out there is my point. How do you guys cut through the noise? Is it, okay, at this particular moment in time, we have X amount of ducks, X amount of projected cash flow at the end of the year. Our decline is going to be X, and we want to backfill with this at this moment, because that's the one interesting thing, on the lower end of the market where I represent and help sell deals, you're always trying to catch a fund at the right time, right? And that gets you an outlier price. If they're looking for that portfolio blend and they need a lot of ducks in that last 5 million of their fund, and you got a duck heavy deal, it might be good, but they may need more PUDs, right? Flatten out the decline in 18 months. So do you guys look at it like that, or is it tier one rock and you look at the assets at play and you dig in where you want to dig in? Just kind of curious how you view all the processes out there.
Yeah. All those opportunities that you listed there, Tim, they certainly were all ones that we actively were either having past tense or present tense, looking at those opportunities. And I think the first criteria is, as you said, at the end there, it's all about the rocks, for us. That's our first criteria, is where do these lands fit within our view of what core and tier one is, and sort of passes that smell test. Then we sort of dig into it. In terms of whether it's, PDP versus, development heavy, I think that probably more comes into it if it's a much larger opportunity. I mean, it's one where, as Dave said at the outset, we have a hungry dividend that we always need to feed, with an expectation from our shareholders that, 60% of our cash flow will be going towards feeding that dividend. So, if it's pick a number, if it's $100 million type dollar deal and it has zero PDP, well, that's kind of hard to pay those near-term dividends from. Equally, we're not really interested in just buying a block of ice that is just going to slowly melt away without ever having, more upside to it. As much as our investors want the dividend, they also want growth. So, we need to be balancing, both ends of the spectrum.
No, I mean, listen, if I was the one marketing OneMap was more undeveloped, I probably wouldn't have had you guys on the list, right? So you guys have bought very different types of deals. I think the end goal is put Freehold on the list regardless. But, and you guys have done this, we'll start digging into the deals this year, but the diversified Midland Basin acquisition, not that big, 19 million. And I don't know, correct me if it's US or Canadian dollars on that, but then 180 was the biggest one you guys have done last year. So really spreading the gamut. But let's dive in. You did three deals this year, so congratulations. Continue to put a good amount of money to work. Let's dive in a little bit of detail, give some color on them. And I think the overall strategy is really helpful, but 2020 was a lot different than 2021, as is from 2022. So you underwrote these deals in this environment. Maybe it helps sellers get in the headspace of, okay, they bought these types of assets in this environment. I got an asset like that. Let me give them a call. So let's start with what you call the diversified Midland Basin acquisition. Over to you guys.
Yeah, that was 15.5 million US CAD 19 in terms of that diversified Midland deal that we closed at the end of June. You know, that one is sort of it's probably a little more dev heavy. It's about 40% PDP duck, 60% development by value. You know, call it 60% of the development is under Surge and Pioneer, you know, between the two. So it's you know, relatively concentrated under on both great private and a great public. You know, and it's going to add, you know, call it 100 to 150 barrels a day of oil weighted production, you know, to our portfolio. So just a nice little tuck in that, you know, really is synergistic with the larger OneMap deal that we closed in October of last year. That one sort of just, you know, fit really nicely.
Okay. So, yeah. So if you fill in the checkerboard overlay with OneMap, it's very complementary in that regard. Yeah. Because it is extremely diversified. So if you look at just these other two deals, average 1.1% royalty and 0.8% royalty on the next two. But on this one, it was 0.1%. So really, 220,000 gross acres is a big footprint, but there isn't over concentration in anything there. So I think that is your Midland Basin Index Fund, right? Analogy. Yeah. So that's an interesting one for sure. For size, lot of exposure.
And you're even rounding up to 0.1. It's, you know, 0.06 average NRI. You're right.
Okay, great. So moving on, the ones you announced in early July, we'll start, since we're already in the Midland Basin, let's start with the Howard County one, CAD 123. I'll let you do the conversion rate on US dollars.
Yeah, easy numbers, US 100 to, you know, that portfolio. You know, it's the development's a lot under High Peak in the Eastern Howard there, and Surge as well, and Bayswater would be the, you know, kind of between, you know, the three of those operators, that's close to 95% of the development value there. You know, similar to the diversified Midland in terms of being about 40% PDP duck, 60% development. You know, so both we have some near-term, you know, cash flow, but we also have some meaningful development that, you know, that we see, you know, see some tangible results from. You know, I think this asset got us, we were initially cautious because, you know, when you saw the production growth on it, it seemed eye-popping because it's one where we just don't see E&Ps in the Canadian space growing at the pace that High Peak has indicated that it's going to be growing. But the more we dug into it, the more we, you know, kind of believed in the assets and believed in what High Peak is going to be doing. So pretty excited by, you know, this opportunity that we sort of see growing from, you know, 550 barrels a day in Q4 to 750 in 23 and beyond. So, you know, it'll be a pretty solid asset, you know, that pretty growthy asset that we see in the portfolio.
Right. And then Eagle Ford. So CAD 32 million on the the conversion. And yeah, I'm curious to see if it's 40% PDP, 60% dev on the Eagle Ford, or if it's different. So over to you.
Yeah. So this one is US 28.5. It actually closes tomorrow. You know, it's one where, you know, I think we were expecting to close this sometime in September, but we're able to accelerate the title DD. So, you know, we're able to close that one up early, which is really encouraging. You know, this one is probably more like 60-40, 60 PDP, 40, you know, development. So you're right, this is a bit more, you know, complementing, you know, the other two deals that we did that had a little more development to it. You know, this one, I think what attracted us to it is that it's still in our view, it's still probably in the 60-70% core and tier one lands in the Eagle Ford, but we get some operator diversification where we're under EOG and 1776 and BP. You know, between the three of them, they would probably make up close to 80%, 90% of the development value that we ascribed. So it's one where, you know, we're able to still get in what we believe is core Eagle Ford exposure with a little bit of a different operator twist to it.
Great. And one other thing I wanted to touch upon. So in these three deals, so in the Howard County and the Eagle Ford one, so in the Howard County, you paid cash and you used an existing credit facility. And the Eagle Ford one, you used an existing credit facility 100%. So I think that's a result of the heavier PDP component. On the diversified Midland Basin one, how was it funded?
use of cash and balance sheet. So, you know, through all these transactions, said at the outset, you know, we're taking on some additional debt to fund these, but our balance sheet still stays really strong at, you know, less than a half a turn of debt. So, you know, a lot of, you know, capacity, you know, with the new portfolio to be able to, you know, do acquisitions with that balance sheet strength. I think, Tim, one of the other things that's probably worth just touching on, you know, is you're trying to, you know, your listeners' head around, what are they thinking when they're putting these deals together? And one of the things, you know, a big chunk of the portfolio, you know, prior to the Howard County deal, like Rob said, was really underwritten by, you know, blue chip names, you know, the Pioneers, the Marathons, ConocoPhillips, the EOGs, et cetera. And they, you know, they don't have a license to really grow their production, you know, so they're really, you know, managing their production, really, you know, good, solid base production. And one of the things that we didn't have in our portfolio is lands that were underwritten by some privates that have a little bit more license to grow, or in this case, High Peak, you know, startup that, you know, got that license to grow. And so we wanted to have something that was, you know, we call this a little bit more spicier in our portfolio, that that had the capacity to have an operator that wasn't the Conocos, the Marathons, the Exxons, that could actually grow production and get rewarded for that in their share price. So like Rob said, when we were putting all these Lego pieces together to put our portfolio and envision what it looks like, that's another component that, you know, we think about internally here, who's drilling it.
Final question over to you all. You're a buyer of choice right now. Are there some things that have caused you to walk away from a deal from a data room perspective, a title perspective? I'm talking about, you go and you go, well, this is messy. This is going to be a lot of brain ache. And these three opportunities we're looking at, you know, if we were to take them down, for all intents and purposes, maybe they're apples to apples, but this one is, we're just going to throw it out right away because of, you know, diligence related items. Would love to hear what you guys like to see and what has worked, you know, going through due diligence and making an offer and working with the teams, and some things that haven't worked or have been, they're on your no-go list. Yeah. Over to you guys.
Yeah. I mean, probably the, you know, a line that I've heard from our team a number of times is that, you know, we're kind of a data snobs in terms of really, you know, to bit to your point there, if the data is not great, I mean, sometimes that can be a real opportunity where, you know, if you're patient and you're willing to maybe hold your nose, you can, you know, you may be able to get some fantastic opportunities because others, like a Freehold, you know, may not be as motivated to sort of look at something that doesn't have, you know, decent data. But, you know, coming back to the point that we said about how, you know, we really take a detailed bottoms up type perspective on it. If we can't validate that information, it's really hard for us to really put our best foot forward. You know, so that's one where if we don't have, you know, enough history of lease ops to be able to match, you know, what how the PDP looks like, if we're not able to figure out the shape files and sort of really understand, you know, what the land picture looks like, we're just, it's not that we won't look at something. It just, it makes us, I'm just not sure we're going to be the most competitive participant in something like that. When the data is high quality, you know, I think that's where I've seen our ability to differentiate how we look at something.
And then what about relationships and we'll call it asset or basin education? So when you guys look back at the assets you bought, has there been an ongoing dialogue with teams and or bankers before process starts, that when you get in there, you actually already have an understanding of what's going on?
Yeah. I mean, every deal, we're building more of that, you know, that capacity, and then those, you know, kind of building our spider web of connectivity to who the right and best players, you know, are. You know, I think we've added, you know, three new directors to our board, two of which have, you know, direct, you know, are based in the U.S. and have, you know, significant connections through, you know, a number of both the working interest companies and the royalty mineral companies. So, you know, it's one where we're kind of building our connections and our perspectives. You know, I think the other piece of it is what's kind of coming back again to that technical, you know, technical perspective on, you know, where we think core and tier one is. We're always re-looking at that to make sure that, you know, as new well results are kind of coming in, we're redefining, you know, what's core, what was core, or what I should say, what may have been tier two in 2020 suddenly is tier one today, you know, in terms of, and that's kind of something we're kind of constantly looking at in terms of, you know, as the data shows, as well results actually kind of prove up areas that we may have overlooked, you know, we're willing to change the boundaries of what may fit within the portfolio.
Well, excellent. Well, gentlemen, thank you for coming back on. And again, congrats to the continued success of Freehold. I got my pom-poms out and I'm rooting for you for a couple more press releases for the year. So we'll see. But in the interim, you know, best of luck with everything and look forward to seeing you guys in person soon.
Great. That sounds great, Tim. Thanks for the time today. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to this episode of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed. The Minerals and Royalties Authority is a specialist advisory firm focused exclusively on the oil and gas, minerals and royalties space. With our leading content platform and thought leadership, our team is looking to continually bring awareness to the minerals and royalties space in order to help companies and investors form new partnerships and buy and sell more deals. If you're interested in learning more about how Minerals and Royalties Authority can help your team through our offering of consulting services for business development, content creation, executive search, asset divestiture, and investment buy-side advisory, then please send me an email at tim@mineralsauthority.com. Thanks, and see you next time.